Welcome to What's the Point of the Midrash, where we offer suggestions to answer the question, what's the point of the Midrash? My name is Rabbi Josh Uter, and today, changing up the format slightly by using a Midrash not from Midrash Rabbah, the anthology of rabbinic teachings that we've been doing up until now and will probably use for the most part for the duration of this podcast, to instead do a Midrash from the Babylonian Talmud, from a Gemara. The Gemara, both the Babylonian and Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmuds, contain various Midrashim as well, related to biblical verses, Agadic teachings that expand and exposit lots of things on the biblical text. And some of these Midrashim happen to be collected in Midrash Rabbah. Sometimes they're not. The ones that I'll do today happen to be from the Babylonian Talmud. Though, technically speaking, if we're getting really, really pedantic about it, the Midrash that we're about to do, while the main source that I'll be discussing happens to be from the Babylonian Talmud, does in fact appear in Midrash Rabbah just elsewhere. This week's Parsha that we'll be focusing on is Parshat Vayera. However, the Midrash in Midrash Rabbah, where we do find a parallel to the Gemara that we'll be discussing, does appear in Midrash Rabbah elsewhere, but on Parshat Naso, in Bamidbar Rabbah, in Numbers Rabbah, in chapter 11, paragraph 7. So, yeah, technically it's in Midrash Rabbah too, just not on this week's Parsha. Fudging it a bit, but lest anyone start yelling at me that, hey, this is in Midrash Rabbah. Yes, it is, just not in our Parsha. The main source seems to be the Babylonian Talmud. So with that introduction out of the way, today's Midrash is a comment on Genesis 18, verses 12 and 13, which state as follows. Vatitzchak Sarah bekirbah lemor. Sarah said to herself, saying, Acharei veloti hayetali edna v'aduni zaken. Now that I am withered, am I to have enjoyment, referring to her ability to have kids, with my husband so old, or because my husband is so old. Vayomar Hashem el Avraham, God says to Abraham, Lama zet sachaka Sara le'emor, ha'af umnam eled ve'ani zakanti. Why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I bear a child as old as I am, or and I am old? Now, for those who are very sensitive to biblical language or shifts in the statements, you may notice that in verse 12, the verse states, Va'adoni zaken, that my husband is old, but what God says to Abraham is in the mouth of Sarah, Va'ani zakanti, that I am old, meaning God, who presumably knows what Sarah says to herself, as evidenced by his comments to Avraham, but God does not report what Sarah said to herself 100% accurately, where Sarah said that my husband is old, but when God presents this to Avraham as what Sarah was actually thinking, it's I am old, meaning Sarah was saying, how can this happen? Because I am old. Now, technically speaking, we can point to a few other discrepancies in that where God does not quote what Sarah said to herself exactly to Avraham in terms of ha'af omnam eled, which Sarah did not say in verse 12. The meaning was pretty much clear, but that was not. But yeah, we can say, well, close enough, like you got the gist or the point of it. But in terms of the shift of Sarah saying, or Sarah's doubt coming from Avraham being old versus Sarah being old in terms of being too old to have children, that discrepancy is something that the Midrash picks up on. Rashi, in his comments, says, Shina hakatuv mipnei hashalom, that the text changes the language or the verse out of peace. Sha'arehi amara va'adonisa kain, saying that, as you know, mentioned before, that in verse 12, Sarah says, va'adonisa kain, my husband is old, but in verse 13, it says, va'aniza kanti, referring to, I, Sarah, am old. Rashi here is referencing the Gemara in Bava Metzia, page 87a, which says as follows, Tana debe Rabbi Yishmael, that the school of Rabbi Yishmael taught, She'afilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shinabo, that even God himself altered the text or changed something because of it. She'ne'emar, because as it is written from Genesis 18:12, Vatitzchak Sarah Bikurba, that Sarah laughed to herself, etc. Va'adoni Zaken, and my husband is old. V'chtiv, and it says in Genesis 18:13, Vayomar Hashem al Avraham, Va'ani Zakanti. And God says to Abraham, I am old. So here the school of Rabbi Yishmael taught, which is what is cited by Rashi, that peace is so great that even God can alter the truth for the sake of peace. I can't speak for everyone, but in my religious education, this idea comes up often, both formally from the yeshivot that I happen to have gone to, and also something that I hear a lot by various rabbis and various speakers, depending on the context, often regarding interpersonal relationships between spouses. Specifically here, we're dealing with the relationship between Avram and Sarah, husband and wife, and the idea of you're allowed to lie specifically for shalom bayit, for peace in the house, based on this specific Gemara. And on one hand, it does seem very clear-cut about being able to lie for peace, because, you know, if even God can do it, because after all, had God said what Sarah said accurately, saying that she couldn't have kids because her husband is old, that would make Avraham feel kind of bad or worse than if she said, well, you know, it's a problem with me. Of course, at the same time, you can always ask, well, why did God bring this up to Avraham in the first place? Didn't really have to, you know, kind of snitch on Sarah and saying, hey, why did Sarah, you know, laugh at this? Because again, she said it to herself. Had God not, you know, actually gone to Avram and saying, you know, hey, you know, why did your wife laugh about this? Avram wouldn't have known because she kept it to herself. So yes, let's leave that as an open question about using this specific exchange as a source for being able to lie for the sake of peace, because really, if you're talking about doing something for the sake of peace, God could have just as easily not mentioned something to Avraham, or perhaps said it a little bit more gently, or any other number of things that wouldn't have been nearly as confrontational or adversarial as, you know, as at least as I read the verse, such that the shift from Adoni Zaken to Va'ani Zakanti seems, to me, at least a little bit minor, given the whole context of the thing. But let's leave that aside for the moment. What fascinates me about this specific midrash, about how great peace is because you're allowed to lie for it, is that there's another Gemara in the Babylonian Talmud, in Yevamot 63a, of a fascinating story, in my opinion, because it deals with the personal lives of the rabbinic sages. And here, we find that the idea of lying for peace is not necessarily a good thing either. The Gemara here discusses the marriage of Rav, who was a transitional figure between the period of the Tanaim and the Amoraim. And according to this Gemara, he did not have a great marriage. A specific example that's given here is that when Rav would ask his wife to prepare him lentils, she would prepare him peas, and if he asked for peas, she would prepare him lentils. The Gemara here says kamitza arile, that would constantly aggravate him, and this was a you know, you can call this like, well, that doesn't really matter so much of like, you know, mixing up the order, but it was something that was done apparently out of spite, which even if it's relatively trivial, if you know your spouse is doing something as a, you know, what's said here in Israel a bit as a dafkinik, where you're doing it purely to be contrarian and do the exact opposite, it seems like it would be a fairly unpleasant marriage. Fast forwarding a bit in their marriage, when Rav Sanchia grew up, Rav would tell his son Chia to deliver his menu request to his to Rav's wife, Chia's mother, and Chia would reverse the requests, because if he knew that the wife was just going to do the exact opposite of what the husband wanted, he said, hell, simple. I'm just going to reverse the order. And this way, you know, my father gets what he wants and my mother has the whatever satisfaction she gets out of doing the exact opposite of whatever he requested. So when this happened, Rev goes to his son, your mother is improved. And Chia goes to Rev, like, you know, being honest, saying, well, it's actually, I was the one who reversed the request. Rav's response here is what I think is really fascinating, because Rav says this is an example of the statement that says, he who comes from you shall teach you wisdom, right? Now, I'm not exactly sure what the wisdom here is saying. Well, if you know the person is just going to do the opposite, just reverse it. But whatever, it seemed like a fairly simple solution that didn't, you know, whatever. But he compliments his son on his thinking about trying to solve the problem. All right, but that aside, he actually tells his son Chia, don't do this. Even though it's a completely trivial solution to the problem, this is something you, Chia, should not do in terms of reversing the order and tell your mother that I said X when I really said Y. And the reason Rav gives Chia is citing the verse in Jeremiah 9:4. Limedu l'shonam daber sheker ha'ave nila'u, that they have trained their tongues to speak falsely, they wear themselves out working iniquity. The problem that Rav had with Chia, with him doing so, isn't that his intentions were bad. He was certainly lying, but he was lying for Shalom Bayit. He was doing the exact thing that we saw was permitted from the Gemara in Bava Metzia that we cited at the very beginning, that this is how great peace is, that you are allowed to lie from it. But what Rav points out to Chia is that there's a cost to doing so. And that is, once you train yourself to speak lies, even if your intentions are noble, the falsehood can have a corrupting influence on the person who is doing so, meaning they give up that ability or the habit of telling the truth and telling the truth consistently in order to achieve some other means. And if the only criteria you have for telling a lie is, well, I had a very good reason for doing so, lots of people can rationalize a whole bunch of actions. So at the end of the day, is it good to lie for peace? Well, it's a bit tricky. It seems from the Gemara in Bava Metzia 87 that peace is important enough that it can be done. But from the Gemara in Yevamot 63a, even though it's, in my opinion, a similar, if not identical, instance of someone lying for the sake of peace in the home, there may be some additional costs or other moral hazards that we really should consider. So whenever I hear the line about you're allowed to lie for peace, yes, it is absolutely there and represented, but we also have another rabbinic source that seems a little bit cooler on the idea. And the reason why I like this juxtaposition is, like I said in the introduction of the Midrash, when you go through the entire corpus of rabbinic literature and trying to find, well, what did they say about X or Y, it's not uncommon to find mutually contradictory positions or things that are at odds with each other. And in this case, you will find two profound truths. One, the point of the Midrash that we saw earlier, that you are allowed to lie for peace, and sometimes lying for peace is a good thing. Sometimes it might even be essential. Certainly might not be the greatest moral problem that you can do, especially if God himself can do it. And at the same time, it is also a truth that training oneself to lie and justifying it afterwards might not be the best practice to live by either. Anyway, this is what I think is the point of the Midrash, in addition to which the dangers of taking one Midrash in isolation and holding this up as representative of the entire corpus of Jewish thought on the subject. But what do you think? What's the point of this Midrash, and how would you reconcile these two conflicting rabbinic texts? Something to think about this Shabbat. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.